In 1463, King Edward IV banned the import of playing cards to England at a time when they were becoming popular across Europe. There was, of course, a domestic playing card market, and this total ban on foreign playing cards gave English producers an almost total protection. As an aside, Edward IV's daughter, Elizabeth of York, who married Henry VII, might look familiar to some of you. Historians have long noted how her portrait is strongly reminiscent of the Queen of Hearts in the English deck of playing cards. However, evidence for this is scant, since the Puritans under Oliver Cromwell destroyed most of the packs of cards in the country after they banned games of all kinds during the interregnum. However, today we're going to be focusing on the man that Cromwell would famously behead, Charles I. Despite the fact that foreign cards had been banned from the time of Edward IV, they still found their way into England, and the roaring playing card black market was undercutting the protected English producers. In fact, Charles's father, James I, instituted a special law requiring playing cards to be stamped with a special insignia, which would appear on the Ace of Spades, which later became known as stamp duty and was maintained for many years after the Restoration up until 1960. And this is why the Ace of Spades still has a more ornate design than the other aces. Anyway, the persistence of foreign cards being sold on the black market led the domestic playing card manufacturers to lobby Charles I into instituting a royal charter in 1628 and establishing the Worshipful Company of Makers of Playing Cards, which still exists today, by the way, and even has its own website, which you can see here. This was essentially a guild that was supposed to help protect the domestic card playing industry even beyond the absolute ban on foreign imports and James I's insignia stamp. But even after all of this, the haberdashers still managed to get supplies of cards from abroad, and the poor playing card makers, so ran the pathetic story, compelled to sell at low rates, could scarce get bread for their fainting bodies. In this extremity, they had cast themselves at the foot of the throne, and in 1637, His Majesty had graciously convenated under the Great Seal to buy a constant weekly proportion of good cards at specified rates, and to such of the company as were door windows, aged men past labour, or not able to maintain themselves, His Majesty, out of his princely goodness, had allowed a maintenance of his profits, for which the petitioners praised God and blessed His Majesty. The basic deal here was that Charles I was effectively investing in these card companies through fiscal stimulus in exchange for a cut of their profits, 36 shillings from the sale of every 144 packs of cards, or 3 pence per pack, which was estimated to give him a return of between 5,000 and 6,000 pounds a year. Quite a lot of money in those days. This suggests that around 480,000 packs of cards were sold every year. Now, what's quite interesting here is that the king was acting as a kind of proto-Keynesian. We see protectionism, we see fiscal stimulus and state-backed monopoly. But because the king's finances were technically still private and not public, as Hans Hermann Hoppe has pointed out, we also see him acting as a kind of capitalist entrepreneur, speculating on the fact that the playing card market seemed quite buoyant in 1637 and demand looked set to stay so, at least until that rotter Cromwell got in. The very existence of the black market in itself was a sure sign of this. And Charles I was effectively investing to make a return. The divine right of entrepreneurs, you might say. Now get out.